Let's hit it.
And welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
All right, here we go. What you think about?
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm thrilled you are joining us today. We're going to be talking about light therapy, which I think is really exciting. But before I introduce our guests, I always like to do a shout-out. And for those of you that are new, just explain who we are, basically. I am the daughter of a mother who lived with dementia for 30 years. That's how I got into this space. And our goal here is to raise all voices all around the world, from people who are diagnosed to family, to businesses, advocates, entertainment researchers, and so much more. And so we also like to have a conversation. So we chat for roughly an hour with somebody who's in the trenches making a difference. And it's just a very informal, kind of fun, hopefully connect you to some services, products, and tools you didn't know. I'd also like to mention that it is World Alzheimer's Month. Some of you might not be aware of that, so there's a lot of activity going on right now. And on the 21st, the Alzheimer's Disease International will be launching their new report, which is about the journey of diagnosis. And I can't wait to see what comes of that. Now, we are also involved here at Alzheimer's Speaks with Dementia Map, which is a global resource directory. And that is free for anyone to access. You don't have to register. We've kept it real simple. We have about 150 different categories that you can search. And so I would encourage you to go and check that out. If you happen to be somebody with a service, product, or tool, it's really easy to sign up. There are both free and a couple of enhanced plans, and I'd be glad to step you through those as well. But you'll really be able to find a lot of great information, and the site is growing every single day. The other day, on Tuesday, I interviewed Ryan Lynn from the Project CARE. And this is a project where they're studying stress, and they're looking for about 50 more participants, and there's no cost to you. In fact, you can get compensated up to $255 for participating in the study. And to be eligible, you have to have cared for somebody like 4 hours a day within the last 3 months, and actually multiple family members can apply for this. You'll be outfitted with a Fitbit during the study, which will track heart rate and sleep, and then they will send short little surveys that will only take you like a minute, because they want to monitor how your stress is doing throughout the day. So you can get more information by emailing them by going care during COVID at rice.edu. Also, there's a couple of support groups that I would love to invite you to. One is a memory cafe, Arthur's Memory Cafe. We host that the second and fourth Wednesday of each month at 1 o'clock Central Time. That is virtual, and all are welcome. If you happen to be here in Minnesota where I'm at, I also do an in-person support group for care partners, which is sponsored by Brookdale North Oaks, and that is the last Wednesday of each month from 10 to 11. And you can always reach out to me for more information. Next week, we'll be doing a virtual presentation sponsored by Maple Hill Senior Living, and Moments Hospice, and that's going to be talking about perceptions and stigmas and services and movements regarding dementia. Only have a couple more housekeeping things to go here, and we'll be able to introduce our guests. Also, Compassion and Choices is having their annual event October 6th, and I would encourage you to participate. They are all about end of life and making that easy. They actually have a tool, those living with dementia, and it's absolutely spectacular. And again, you don't have to have dementia to need to pull together your end of life wishes for people to know. We're going to hear from the Footbar Walker, and we will be back with our guests.
Introducing the life-changing Footbar Walker.
I'm Peggy from Danville, Kentucky, and I'm 91 years old. The Footbar Walker revolutionized my care of George. The saving that I made from having to put him in a nursing home came to about $192,000. The Footbar Walker opens and closes just like a standard walker. The only thing that is different is the top bar and the foot bar. Does that ever make a difference?
Does someone you love use a walker? Do they struggle to get up from a seated position? Are you a caregiver dealing with physical pain and stress as you help your patient? The Footbar Walker was designed to assist not only the patient, but also the caregiver. Patients have more control standing up, and no lifting from the caregiver is required. See how it works at thefootbarwalker.com. That's thefootbarwalker.com. Peggy, would you recommend the Footbar Walker?
Do I ever? I would not be in the health that I'm in today at this age had it not been for the Footbar Walker.
I love that walker. It's really quite amazing. So you should check it out if you know of anyone in need. Well, let's get on to our topic today about, can light therapy really help somebody living with dementia? And can it help the rest of us as well? These are questions that I know I'm really interested in learning about, because this would be something that would be passive and wouldn't be very difficult to incorporate into anyone's life. So today we are honored to have Terry Moore with us. He is the chairman of Bright, and he has 30 years of management consulting experience and has delivered strategic marketing services to large corporations. And he also sits on the board of like TEDx and the Columbia University for radiologists and research. And he is an advisor and an investor and a mentor to health tech and biotech companies. And so I'm just thrilled to have Terry with us today. So Terry, how are you doing?
Lori, I'm in pretty good shape today. How are you?
I am doing great. So I really appreciate
Wonderful.
You taking the time to be with us. And,
well, Lori, let me start by saying how wonderful I think it is that you're actually doing this program, that you're providing a base for people who need to have this dialogue, to have this dialogue. I think that's wonderful. Thank you.
Well, you know, I came about this because my own mom lived with dementia for 30 years, and as a frustrated daughter and family member, thinking there's got to be more people like us, and there sure as heck has to be more services, products, and tools. I really, you know, my vision or my passion since 2009 when I stepped into this was to connect people, because I think families deserve choice.
I think that's really important.
Wonderful. Well, I also want to introduce Veronica Price, and she's a neurobiologist and a serial entrepreneur with 20 years of diverse business experience in startups and corporations and nonprofits as well. And she is Bright's chief knowledge officer, and she, prior to Bright, was focused on training entrepreneurs and pilot programs and developing new markets. And, you know, to my knowledge, this whole light therapy is a new venture. We don't hear a whole lot about this. So welcome, Veronica.
Thank you, Lori. Great to be here.
Yeah, I always ask every one of my guests if they've been personally touched by dementia. And so, Veronica, I'm going to throw this one to you first. Have you experienced dementia in your own family or circle of friends?
So, yes, in my immediate family, we do have a case of an advanced dementia that's been kind of undifferentiated. So we don't have an Alzheimer's diagnosis. As I think we as caregivers know, a diagnosis isn't that easy to get to. But the cognitive decline is very present, and very likely it is, in fact, an Alzheimer's diagnosis. And I think we're probably a few steps away from that final diagnosis.
Wonderful. Well, that report from Alzheimer's Disease International probably be of interest, because they're going to be talking about getting that diagnosis. And it is still very common today for it to take a couple of years for people to get a diagnosis, and sometimes even longer in the process, because it's getting to the right people with the right knowledge to really be able to pin it down, because there's so many overlapping things that can be occurring with symptoms. So thank you for sharing that. Terry, how about you? Have you been touched personally with your family or circle of friends?
Well, the story of my life is very much that story. Let me simplify the version and say that I had a happy career as a management consultant for about 30 years, and I eventually wound that business down and retired so I could move to New York City and marry my high school sweetheart. And I did that. My wife, Lynn, is one of the most brilliant people I know. She has left really an indelible mark on both banking and marketing, and was widely acknowledged as one of the leaders in both of those fields. And we had a very happy life together until she started to get sick. And she soon, very soon, became an Alzheimer's patient. And that was about 5 years ago. So, yes, I know firsthand this is a condition and a disease that I take very personally, because it affects my life directly.
Wow. Yeah, there's not too many people it hasn't touched. And those that it hasn't, you know, it's probably waiting for you out there someplace, because this is a disease that knows no boundaries. It just doesn't really care who you are, where you live, how much money you make, or lifestyle. You know, any of
right.
us are susceptible.
That's right. And not only that, unlike many other diseases, this is a disease that affects the entire family, because the amount of impact it has and the importance of caregiving really consumes family resources of time and energy and money. And so often we focus on the person who has the disease, but this is a disease that really, as you say, knows no boundaries and affects many.
Yeah. Oh, and I personally get frustrated with the numbers, even though they're large, and people are mm-hmm. shocked when they hear how many millions of people are living with this. And I tell them, first of all, those are only the ones that are diagnosed. There's a lot of people out
yeah.
there that haven't been diagnosed. And then you have this huge ripple effect in terms of, you know, family and friends and workforce and neighborhoods and groups that are all affected. So this is a really important conversation for us to have. Terry, I'm really interested in, you know, what was your inspiration behind Bright? and what's your mission? Because, you know, as a family member, you know, all of us are sitting out there thinking, what can we do? Light never came to mind for me, you know, in terms
well,
of that.
So
how did this
that's
come about?
That's because it's fairly new. As I said, my wife was diagnosed about 5 years ago. And, of course, the first thing I did, and I think it's typical, is throw myself into the research and see what's being done. I have a pretty good science background, and I like to do research. So I really was able to get a good look around, and it was incredibly bleak. There were no treatments. There was no cure. standard treatments. The last drug that had been approved for the disease had been approved more than a decade before. And the world was incredibly bleak. And then I found this research, and original research being done at MIT, where what they had done is to take a population of laboratory animals, white mice in this case, that had been bred to have high levels of plaque in their brains, and they exposed those mice to a flashing light, a light that flashed at one of the natural brain frequencies, a frequency called gamma, which is 40 flashes a second. And in a short time, they had half as much plaque in their brains and began to perform better. Now, you know, this is real science. I know it's done with laboratory animals, but my thinking was, well, you know, it seems to work on brother mammals, and it's not invasive, and it's not dangerous. So I hired an engineer to build me one of these things, and I brought it home and turned it on. And in a very short time, people were startled by the effect it had on my wife, and the doctors were asking me where they could get one. So I decided I would make this technology available because there's so many people in my position who can't wait for all of the science and all of the testing and all of the research to be done, which it will be at some point. But right now, I needed something to do, and I felt anything that was positive and hopeful and not invasive and based in science was worth a try. And that's why I'm here, and I suppose our mission is to beat Alzheimer's and prevent cognitive decline.
Well, I'm thrilled that you took those steps and did the research and decided to expand it, knowing others are in need of this. And, you know, it may not be the magic pill everybody wants that's going to be the cure for this. You know, we're finding more of the social interaction, the impact that that has.
Yes.
There's so many different angles with this. And, you know, I personally think we need to kind of spread our wings and look more diversely instead of just going down one rabbit hole. And that's one of the things I've really been pushing for, because we don't necessarily even know what causes the disease. And there's so many different types of symptoms. You know, we have to have a broader wingspan of this. So
yes,
thank you.
It needs to be much broader. I agree. And if there's anything that I've come to be a strong believer in, other than 40 hertz light, is the fact that the real answer here is in prevention. And there's mm-hmm. so many things we can do to preserve our cognitive health before we get sick or instead of getting sick. And those are things that everyone can do, and they're available immediately.
Now, have you, like, you know, I know we're talking about dementia, but you hear about chemo brain, you hear about, you know, menopause fog and things like that. Have you found that it helps those types of situations as well in terms of cognition?
Let me defer to Veronica on this. It's a good science question.
Sure, okay. Lori. So we have not kind of been focused on that, but I think as part of an overall improvement in physical health, usually when we're talking about menopause, it's hormonal balance, it's exercise, movement, kind of making changes to you know, to your hormonal flux, if that's an option for you. Although we don't focus on it, we do know that Alzheimer's affects women significantly more often than men, and mm-hmm. we know that this is the case. And so we encourage the use of Beacon 40, which is our product, which flashes at 40 hertz, as a part of an overall kind of overhaul or change in your lifestyle, and this is all to the idea that really the newest research shows that almost 60% of all dementia is preventable if you start the work in advance. So change in lifestyle, everything from diet to movement to hormonal balance, if that's a particular, it could issue that is upon you. And all of this overall, of course, leads to physical health, but also to cognitive health. And we believe that the use of a 40 hertz light is really just kind of a link in that preventative daily care.
Okay, wonderful. I also wanted to ask you, Veronica, because there's been a lot of interest and excitement around some of the advancements in terms of research with Alzheimer's, you know, just in the past month. And I know there's been a lot of hoopla over the new medication where that's been, you know, for the cost and, you know, the science behind it and so forth. What are your thoughts with your thoughts in terms of what's going on in this space and how your work can impact, you know, the dementia community as a whole?
So I think we're all kind of in the space following with bated breath. We all await some sort of magic pill, and I think we all hoped and continue to hope that, you know, this sort of medication will come in and help kind of adjust kind of Alzheimer's as a whole. Unfortunately, as we know currently, that's not necessarily the case. We're still awaiting. It's a very kind of difficult space for to be in right now. I don't have much to say about the kind of the newest offered medication in the field, just because no one technically has anything to say. It's very experimental, and because of all of the kind of internal political issues within FDA issues within, it's not necessarily reliable. And so what we are still kind of hoping for is kind of twofold. We're hoping for more science in the kind of in the diagnosis space and like the biomarkers of the world. And really we are almost maniacally focused on the daily adjustments and preventative care and really living almost kind of with that in mind. We know how many more people will come into this space. We know that people are aging, for example, in the U.S., towards 65 and plus at the rate of 11,000 a month. So we know that that space is increasing. We know that more and more people in this country will be affected by the disease. And really the only thing we truly can rely on right now is preventability. And so we're really kind of maniacal about that, you know, changes in your daily care, and including light therapy in that for an hour a day. And we, you know, in addition to what has been in the space, there is, of course, research that Terry mentioned previously done on animal models that has recently come out in humans, and this is results of studies coming out of MIT, I think supported by Yale, and these are really impressive to us and really help us believe even further in fast-tracking this cutting-edge scientific research. The research that we point to really is really promising in that it shows in human models a 65% reduction in whole brain atrophy, and this is brain volume loss, which is a known marker for Alzheimer's as neurons die and kind of leave space within. There is an increased connectivity of the brain, and so there's a cognitive functional improvement and daily functional improvement. There's also a really interesting marker in a decrease in sleep fragmentation. And for those of us who care for those with Alzheimer's, we know that this is a marker that both kind of precedes dementia in some ways, but is very present in many of Alzheimer's patients. And this is kind of awake states in the middle of the night. This is kind of an ability to fall into deep sleep. And there's a very strong correlation, of course, between sleep and Alzheimer's as it kind of progresses. So really interesting data coming out just really about a month and a half ago. really about 40 hertz in the way it affects humans. And that's really kind of exciting for us and really the families we serve.
Well, exactly. So, you know, with this light, I think one of you had mentioned, you know, you need to be in this light about an hour of a day. Is that correct?
That's correct. So an hour a day, it doesn't have to be, you know, at one time. It could be broken up. But yes, an hour a day, and our light, especially if you're familiar with our light, we recently launched a new version of the Beacon 40, and this is a smart home connected light. It's very kind of sleek. It kind of folds very neutrally into any space. It's something that we as entrepreneurs who are focused on the user experience, something that can be used really every day without any stigma. It just kind of sits in your space. It can be next to your laptop. It can be nearby your library while you're reading a book. It's something that is just kind of present there. You can depend on it to be available for you for 1 hour a day, and that's it.
So is this something that you have to, like, stare at, or does it just have to be in the room?
That's a very good question. So no, you do not. In fact, you definitely don't want to stare at it. The light has to kind of hit your optical nerve. So it has to be somewhere within kind of your peripheral view, mainly because the kind of the way that is believed to work is that it entrains your own internal system to oscillate, to vibrate at that 40 hertz. And in doing so, it kind of reboots or kind of recalibrates the brain for a period of time to its healthy function, and it's, so it's able to kind of do its job better. It's able to kind of refresh, if you will, and kind of remove or deplaque for a period of time.
Okay. So I would imagine then if somebody is using this, a care partner may have to really know what someone's peripheral vision is, because what is yours is not necessarily going to be theirs, especially as the disease progresses. Typically we go more into that tunnel vision, and that gets a little smaller. Can that have an effect in terms of the positioning? Or is that, or am I going too deep and it's not that important?
I think it's a really good question. It is probably something for us to look into. I think tunnel vision may be a function of how things are seen, may not be a function of how the eye works. So it's just the way that a signal should be received, and that is just through the optical nerve. I'm not sure if tunnel vision is a function of the nerve of the eye, but it's something that I can look into. As far as we understand, it shouldn't be behind you, for example. So it has to be somewhat within your space. It could also be reflected from something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Go ahead, Jerry.
I think many of our users do what I did at home, which is to put the Beacon 40 right next to the television. Because my wife certainly pays attention to the television, and there it is.
Okay.
And hasn't been a problem.
Okay. So I was thinking with peripheral that it would have to be out further. If you were looking at the TV, I was thinking it would have to be out to the side more. But, I'm glad we're having this conversation. Okay.
You can look directly at it or have it in your peripheral vision or maybe just have it in the room as long as one gets the pulsating light.
Okay.
Is there a distance that you should be from it?
Again, no prescribed distance. Light travels, so as long as it hits your optical nerve within your comfort. And the Beacon 40 also has a number of settings. You can change the tone, the light, kind of color, depending on the time of the day you're choosing to use it or what you prefer. And also the brightness. So if you happen to have a long room and let's say you want to read by the window, you can turn it up so it kind of travels and it kind of meets you where you are. Alternatively, if you're working and you're emailing and it's right by your laptop, maybe you can have it at a lower setting because that's kind of what you are comfortable with. The intensity of the light doesn't change its intention and its function.
Okay. I was also going to ask you, you know, with this now, is this because I think you had mentioned that it, you know, it flashes. And so for a lot of people, they're going to think of a strobe light, you know, type beep, you know, beeping at them with it. Is it that type of intensity or is it a softer? Because I know also for some people, let's say if they're epileptic, you know, that can trigger them as well. So I want to get a better feeling for kind of the pulsing that you're talking about.
Of course. So, I mean, most of our users describe the Beacon 40 as sort of a, like a flickering light, like a candlelight somewhere in the distance. And that's really the experience of it. You're not really at a disco party. It's not really a strobe light as you described it.
No. Let me also add, this is 40 hertz or 40 flashes a second. The flashing rate that seems to be more dangerous for epileptic contact is way down in the 20 and 15 hertz. Now, that isn't to say it can't happen up where we are, but it's not likely, although we do caution people if they have photosensitivity to be aware of that.
Okay,
but
that's
most often, the experience I have seen so often with our customers is they will turn it on and they'll think it's too bright or they don't like the flashing. And about a minute and a half later, they don't notice the flashing. And then the next thing they notice is when it turns itself off.
Yeah,
so I think it's very easy to accommodate. And, of course, one can change the brightness.
Yeah, it's kind of like living next to a police station or a fire station. It drives you nuts when you first move in, going, oh, my gosh, I didn't know that my neighborhood was in crisis constantly. And then, you know, you don't notice it at all once it's there.
You know, I wonder also, and maybe this is just my personal experience. I'm actually, the light is right in front of me as I speak to you. I wonder if because it syncs in with the natural rhythm of the brain, if at some point, you know, it becomes unnoticeable because it's just such a natural flow and the brain accepts it as such.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even realize that I had it on until you just mentioned it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I have it on my desk all the time. It's on at this very moment. And I rarely notice it. And I have it pretty bright.
Interesting. Yeah, it would be interesting to test that if you're ever looking for testers. In terms of the process, please let me know on that. I'm wondering, so, you know, you talked about prevention as well as those that are already diagnosed. So, Terry, for you, did you notice a difference for yourself at all in terms of your cognition?
My own? Yes. I do feel more focused, and I think my mood is better, and also, and this is typical from what we hear from our customers, my sleep is better.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are all connected, obviously, but my own experience is yes. Yes, indeed, and that's why, as I said, I have it on my desk at this very moment.
Yeah, well, you know, I think in light therapy, you know, more of us have heard about, I'm in Minnesota, where people have a hard time with our winters because we don't have as much light. And so, you know, they use their light therapy for that just to soak it up and make them feel better. Do you think there's, because I can see this happening too, do you think it can give you a calmness as a care partner just knowing you're trying something else in terms of their sense of being?
Well, I think so, and I think in many ways that's how I got started here, because as I said, if you're looking for alternatives and you find something that's positive and hopeful and encouraging and not invasive and not dangerous and is backed by science, why not try it? And I think that flicker of hope is available. Constantly.
Yeah, I think that makes a big difference in the caring journey when you feel like you said, at least you're trying something.
So much a part of my story. I felt so frustrated and helpless until I found 40 Hertz Light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, similar to me, I think, when I first spoke to a neurologist, with my father, his recommendation was to get some puzzles, and that isn't very empowering. And it really just, you know, it kind of disconnects you in a way. And there's knowing that the photobiomodulation, which is kind of something you mentioned, like for seasonal affective disorders, there's also red light therapy for wounds and things of that nature. Knowing that this field is deeply researched and trusted overall, and we're kind of dipping more and more into it, there's growing trust and rightfully so, because it's you know, these are all natural waves, and quite often these changes that we're looking for are natural.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what a nice way to subdue symptoms and using a natural focus instead of something that is foreign to our bodies. And, you know, I do like that it is not, it's not invasive. You know, the pictures of the units, I mean, look really sleek. They almost look like they could be a speaker or, you know, a little Alexis in your house. I mean, they're kind of they kind of have that sleek look that fits in with most anything, and you know, so it doesn't really make any difference in terms of your design of your house or, you know, decor or any of that. You know, it just it just looks like it'll like scoot in, and like you said, not be noticed.
Exactly.
Which is really nice. Veronica, did you want to talk any more about, you know, you had mentioned that like 60% of dementia can be, they're thought to be prevented. Any more that you want to share on that?
Well, I think we're all learning really about what that takes. And I think, so I mean, it's a very broad statistic, and dementia, mm-hmm. as we know, is also a very broad range of symptoms. And Alzheimer's, of course, is the most kind of, not most popular, but it's like the main form of dementia. Mm-hmm. What we are learning is really the connection between all of the many different kind of approaches and potential comorbidities that may have an effect. And short of removing yourself completely from kind of all things that the external things that may cause dementia, everything else really just points to making sure that the body is kind of a fortress against things. So dealing with everything from basics, quitting smoking, alcohol, obesity, stress, hormonal balances, as you mentioned earlier. And then there's kind of additional things, like there's the connection element, there's the physical fitness, which we're learning much more and more in combination with diets, with the Mediterranean diet, for example, which is really popular right now. We're learning a lot more about that way of eating. That improves health, improves cognitive health, improves circulation. And when done as a whole, all of these preventative measures are really the only reliable thing currently that we can depend on. And we see the Beacon 40 as a part of that daily kind of change and action that you take to not just to kind of to treat Alzheimer's, but also to prevent it way in advance. So some of the research we are looking at shows that the clinical symptoms of Alzheimer's and dementia are really kind of present a good 10 to sometimes 15 years prior to the internal changes and the internal mechanisms within. So plaque formation happens way before symptoms really show up. And our goal is to we try to see the body as a whole and try to prevent all of this from happening way in advance, both mm-hmm. with physical changes, with dietary changes, with kind of whole life changes, and the use of, the daily use of the Beacon 40.
Okay, wonderful. Terry, as far as distribution and ordering of this product, is it just as easy as going online like you do with Amazon and things to check
sure.
this out, or is there storefronts, you know, are other people selling it, or is it strictly online?
Well, we have our own site, getmebright.com, and it's available there. Also available at Amazon. And I think if you go to Amazon and search for Beacon 40, you'll find us right away.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're also, as I said, available at getmebright.com, which is our website.
Okay.
Much information.
Okay. And, you know, a lot of people will ask, is there a difference in pricing between the two? Do you get a better deal if you go to your website versus Amazon, or does it really not make a difference? Or is there another difference that it would make to you one way or the other?
Our website, I believe, often has special kind of discount coupons depending on kind of the campaigns that we're running or kind of what we are about at that moment. So really depends on the purchaser's preference, really. But super easy to find us online either way, either Amazon or getmebright.com.
Okay. And it looks like you can purchase just a single light, or you can get a couple or a grouping of lights. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Wonderful. Anything that that I didn't ask you that we should talk about? Terry, anything I forgot?
Well, I think you've done a very good job of describing our product, and I'd like to get back to something you said earlier about the way it looks, because mm-hmm. one of the things that we certainly knew is that it doesn't matter how good a device is if nobody uses it. So we wanted to produce a 40 hertz light source that would fit in virtually any environment, that was not ugly, that did not look like a piece of technology,
mm-hmm.
And that one could control, for example, the tone of the color to match either the time of day or the decor, and, of course, the brightness, since we want that to be controllable. And then finally, we have it as part of a smart home. So if you're connected, you can say, turn up my bright 40% or something like that. We want this to be as easy as possible.
Okay. Now, is this something, because I've not seen, and again, I haven't been traveling with COVID so much, but, you know, I'm just thinking in terms of assisted livings and memory care. I don't remember seeing a product like this, but it seems to me this would make a heck of a lot of sense to have within those communities.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd even go further than that and say that, you know, I've really come to believe that 40 hertz light is like a vitamin.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things it's consistent with is having a clean brain. And you can't be really healthy without a clean brain.
Mm-hmm.
We take the plaque off our teeth. We try to prevent plaque from building up in our arteries. This seems to be a way to keep plaque from building up in our brains. So as I said, I think a 40 hertz light is something like a vitamin. And yes, it will be, I believe, one day in senior care facilities, but everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Veronica, anything that you wanted to add?
I mean, I think Terry did a great job describing it. And I think maybe the only thing that I would point out from the perspective of a caregiver, I like the idea that I can use the smart home element to set up routines. So if I know, for example, that my father has breakfast more or less every day after I give him medication at 10:30 in the morning, I will set up in advance for, let's say, a week or even a month for the lights to go on for an hour then. Or if I know he's watching TV in a particular series. So I have that control over it, and it's not something he needs to really be in control of. He doesn't speak to what he wants to, great, but I know that it's something that I'm doing for him, and I can kind of set it and forget it.
Oh, that's nice, because routines are really important for both care partner and the person with dementia. Well, this has just been fascinating. I'm so thrilled that you guys took the time to share your life's work, Terry, with us, and your passion, and Veronica, your insights with the science. I think this is a brilliant product. And again, people can go to getmebright.com. That's getmebright.com, and check that out. I would also like to invite your organization to look into Dementia Map, because I think this would be a great resource for people to know about. And Dementia Map is, has been a life's dream of mine for 37 years, from when my mom first was diagnosed. And so we are growing the site every single day, but I would love to have the opportunity to talk with you on that, because I think that this, I think families have the right to know options. And to me, that was one of my biggest frustrations, was how do I
find having
stuff?
Options. Simply having options is incredibly important to people, because it gives them some control over their lives and things they can do. Everyone wants to do something, to be helpful, to try to create some helpful impact. Options provide that.
Yep. Well, and I think one of the great things, too, with the site is the word of mouth that people give. You know, when they find some hope, and there's, you know, we've got like 150 different categories for people to be able to search. And we're growing it organically, but it's been really fun to see how people are receiving this and even wanting tours for support groups or for professionals getting CEUs, because people are, they need this information. And I think there's a big paradigm shift of, you know, you can't stand there and say, I have all the resources in my own backyard anymore, in my own community. We are a global world, and, you know, we wouldn't have dementia-friendly communities or memory cafes if we weren't talking with people all over, if we weren't sharing resources and concepts with one another. And, you know, the word in the dementia community travels quickly when people are given hope and when they're given choices. And so, again, I think you guys would be a great match to that. Not to pressure you, but I just, it's hard.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, we will take those words to heart. But and in that connection, let me say again how important I think your program is, because it does this job of connecting people.
Yep. It's been really fun. I'm in a really unique position to connect people all over the world. I'm kind of flabbergasted, you know, how many people I've met since starting this. You know, I think we started the show in 2011. And the stories and the passion and, you know, the gifts that people are bringing using their own skill sets is just incredible. And it's just, you know, we need to get more information to more people that all of this is happening, because it's been happening all along. We just haven't been connected to it. And so, again, having people like yourselves on the show willing to take the time and share what you're doing is so appreciated by all of us. So thank you very much.
Lori, thanks you for your attention and your suggestions. And we are categorically available if we can help you with anything.
Okay. Well, you guys have a wonderful week. And everybody out there, celebrate World Alzheimer's Month, and check out the Alzheimer's Disease International report when that comes out on getting diagnosed. I know there'll be some great insights with that. And you can always go to alzheimerspeaks.com for more information. And again, their website is getmebright.com. Get Me Bright. So thank you all, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye now.
Thank you so much, Lori. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Hi, everyone. This is Meredith from the Senior Fitness with Meredith podcast, where I discuss all things for seniors. from fitness, your health and wellness journeys, how to be all over strong and beyond. I also have my mini podcast called Motivation with Meredith. It's a great, quick motivational pick-me-up for your days. Join me, listen now, search for Senior Fitness with Meredith on your favorite podcast platform.